Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slidekick.
Yarr!
Today is April 9th, 2017, and this is episode 134, Captain Spike's Spring Vacation. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another year of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
And yeah, that's right. Right, we are going to be starting off our fifth year with an extremely self-aggrandizing episode. Every year, we set a goal for ourselves, and this year, our focus is going to be sort of on singling out our own voices and, you know, really working to bring a little bit more of that individualized content to all y'all out there in internet radio land. And we also hope that we can lift up some of your voices as well, which we have a lot of exciting ideas about how to achieve over the coming year. But with all of that having been said, we do have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. So, Slaggy, do you want to get us started today?
Yeah, our first piece of news is that we have the official reveal from Nintendo and Pokemon Company of the mythical Pokemon Marshadow. This Pokemon was, of course, data mined in the past, but now we have an official little teaser trailer coming from Pokemon Company. And this is a ghost-fighting Pokemon that we also have some information that is going to be appearing in the 20th movie, so it'll be interesting to see how that ties in.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. Marshadow is a little cutie, and I'm really interested in his appearance in the upcoming 20th anniversary movie.
Indeed.
Yeah. We also have here word that Project Sonic 2017 has officially been branded Sonic Forces. It'll still be on track to release this holiday season, and it's looking pretty interesting. It looks sort of like the evolution of the gameplay we have been used to since Sonic Colors and more recently with Sonic Generations. Slaggy, did you watch any of the gameplay footage of this one?
I did. What's really interesting is that they say there's going to be modern and classic gameplay, but then a third style that's yet to be revealed. So I'm like, Sonic 3D Blast? IDK? isometric?
That seems terribly unlikely, but we will report on it as soon as we hear about it. We also have word here from Nintendo that they're going to be doubling their production numbers of Switch for the fiscal year ending in March 2018. This is actually a huge vote of confidence in the Switch platform. Initially, in the first fiscal year of the Switch's life, they were going to produce 8 million units. They are now on track to produce 16 million units by next March.
And that's more than the Wii U sold in its lifetime, right?
It sure is. You know, between this, we're also getting word out of a lot of analysts in the last few weeks, including Wall Street Journal, that a lot of the sales numbers really do indicate that we could be looking at another successful platform from Nintendo.
Wow.
You know, I'm always hesitant to throw out the Wii name, but a lot of analysts have been saying it could be another Wii situation. Either way, I have my fingers crossed. You know, a lot of Switches selling can only be good things for those of us who have and like the Switch.
Yeah. Sony Interactive Entertainment has revealed on the official Japanese PlayStation website that they are expecting to end production of PS3 consoles in Japan sometime in the near future. Good night, sweet prince.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about that the other day. It's kind of a trip because the PS3 had a rocky early life, but
it sure did.
You know, now I look back at it as a console I really enjoyed my time with. What about you, Slaggy? I know you have a somewhat interesting history with the PS3.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it had a rocky start, but then it ended up really having some of the greatest games of last generation. And, you know, really, I think that's what helped PS4 be as successful as it has been, is that, you know, after ramping up a little bit, the PS3 really was the better system once people kind of knew how to program for it.
Oh, you mean from in terms of, like, system, like, strength and stuff. And I can see that. You know, I do think that if we look at console-exclusive titles between the PS3 and the 360, toward the end of days, they were all clearly looking better on PS3, so definitely some interesting stuff there. We also have word here out of Square Enix. According to Tabata-san, the director of Final Fantasy XV, that they do have plans in upcoming DLC to explore the character Arden's past. Of course, this is sort of a notable statement because one of the major complaints leveraged about Final Fantasy Fantasy 15 is that, you know, while we do get sort of the overview of Arden's conflict with our heroes, there's a whole lot of mystery left behind in his story. You know, while I didn't mind that myself, I don't necessarily need every narrative beat painted out for me, I would be interested in hearing more about this character. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people are upset, like, oh, the game was shipped incomplete, and they're just trying to make it a complete game now, but, I mean, I guess that's kind of the reality of gaming these days.
I was just gonna say, that's gaming in 2017, though. Like, that's true for every game. I mean, look at the kerfuffle about Mass Effect Andromeda. And then, you know, people are like, oh, it's a new precedent, I don't like it, but if you really look back, the same thing happened to Mass Effect 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I dare say this is how games work now, and the cool thing about it is, you know, if you do just want to wait until, you know, games have their final patches set, and you're playing, you know, the final version of the game, you can do that. You can wait to buy your copy of the game, and you can end up getting it for $20.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is that instead of a game being incomplete forever, now it can continue to grow and evolve, at least.
Right. I'm thinking back to some classic JRPGs that I played back in the day that maybe, like, left me a little wanting, and I would love if some of those games could have gotten patched to be all that they wanted to be. Some of the games in the Lufia series, for example, or even some of the more middling Suikoden releases, you know, if they had gotten patches to fix them up, those all could have been classics.
Yeah. Speaking of DLC, Super Bomberman R is going to be getting some free DLC. There's not many details yet, but it appears to be new maps and characters, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, the big deal here, of course, is that Konami did push a patch through on Super Bomberman R for Switch so that the game plays a little looser and a little better. This has been well received, but additionally, Super Bomberman R is basically the best-selling Bomberman game of the last, like, 15 years. So in a very big way, those of us who bought Super Bomberman R in part to show Konami that there is still a market for these kinds of games, our message was heard. I think it's really cool that Konami is going to be celebrating the success of Super Bomberman R by doing this free DLC. I'm really excited about it. One of my few complaints about Super Bomberman R is probably the lack of maps and stuff, so definitely excited to have that expanded on.
The next piece of news is that we have Oji Hiroi-san's new project announced as Millennium Sisters for smartphone. This is, of course, the latest project from the Sakura Wars creator, and it appears to be about girls who are constellation girls called the Millennium Sisters, taking place on a planet that has been taken over by machines.
All right. I can't help but look forward to that, even if I'm a little hesitant. We also have word here that the upcoming Japanese Switch release from Square Enix, Mina de YY Spelunker, now has a demo up on the Japanese eShop. Of course, we point this out because downloading stuff off of the Japanese eShop on the Switch is super easy. The full game, of course, will be available on 420, but if you'd like to play it before then, check out the demo now.
Excellent.
We also have a bunch of release info here for you. I'll get that started off, of course. We have Touhou Kabuto V arriving in Europe in June and North America in July. That's going to be June 30th and July 4th, respectively. That's going to be releasing on the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. The PlayStation 4 version will be in digital and physical flavors, while the Vita version will, of course, be PSN digital exclusive. The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel, will be releasing on PC this summer. Cooking Mama, Sweet Shop, will be releasing on 3DS on May 16th. Retail and will have a digital release on May 18th. Cave Story Plus will be releasing on Switch in June. It'll be released both physically and digitally at a $29.99 price point.
Oh, nice.
Gundam Versus will be releasing on PS4 in Japan on July 6th. Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series, will begin on April 18th for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, Android, and iOS. Destiny 2 will be releasing on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC on September 8th.
Oh, just a little title. A very niche title.
Right. Are you going to pick up Destiny 2?
Probably, yeah.
We know basically nothing about it at this point, but I'm in. It'll be interesting, though, to see if I'll be going for PS4 again or if I'll swap and go to PC at this point now that it's going to be available for PC.
Oh, good point.
We also have Akiba's Beat coming to North America and Europe in May. More specifically, that'll be releasing on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita in North America on May 16th. The European release will be on May 19th. Valkyria Revolution will be releasing in the West on PlayStation 4, PlayStation Vita, and Xbox One. North America, that's going to be June 27th. The European release will be June 30th. Summer Lesson will be releasing in Asia with English subtitles on April 27th. Yeah, so Summer Lesson, of course, the Bandai Namco released PlayStation VR Moe Sim, sort of. We've talked about this a little bit. Not a game I'm super comfortable with, and yet I'm morbidly curious. Slaggy, what do you think about this news?
Yeah, I think that's a Summer Lesson I'm going to pass on.
We have the regrettable news that Sonic Mania has been delayed to the summer, but Guilty Gear Xrd Rev 2 will be releasing for PS4 in North America, as well as PS3, on May 26th. The standalone game will be $39.99, or you can just download the upgrade patch for your copy of Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator for $19.99. I think that's a really cool strategy for them to do, and I hope we see more of that coming out of Arc System Works moving forward. We also had an interesting release while we were sort of in our off state, and I was off in Japan, where we got the North American Virtual Console release of Bomberman 64 on Wii U. This is, of course, a fan favorite game that a lot of us thought we would never see on the Virtual Console due to emulation issues. This is really exciting news for me. Slaggy, are you a big fan of Bomberman 64?
Yeah, I seem to remember it being good times.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, that's definitely one that's going to be worth keeping your Wii U hooked up for a little while. We also have word that Wonder Boy: The Dragon's Trap will be arriving on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch on April 18th.
Oh, wow.
These are going to be digital releases only, but there is some expectation that there might be physical releases moving forward. Additionally, there will be a PC version several weeks later, though we don't have a specific date for that. We also have word that Summon Night 6 will be releasing on May 23rd. Trails in the Sky 3rd will be out for PC on May 3rd. And Agents of Mayhem, the newest game from the makers of Saints Row, will be releasing on August 15th. So, with all of that having been said, I think it's time for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god. News.
Oh my god.
So this is a little tidbit that a lot of people are excited about, and that's the announcement from Square Enix of Seiken Densetsu Collection for Switch. It is going to feature Seiken Densetsu Final Fantasy Gaiden, which is Final Fantasy Adventure over here in the United States, or Final Fantasy, or is it just Mystic Quest? Not even Final Fantasy, Mystic Quest.
I think it was just Mystic Quest.
Mystic Quest in Europe. Seiken Densetsu 2, Secret of Mana, and Japanese only Seiken Densetsu 3. This is going to feature multiplayer ability for Seiken Densetsu 2 and 3. Right now, the collection's only confirmed for Japanese release on June 1st for the price of 4,800 yen.
Excellent. So like 30, 45 bucks. A lot of people online, myself included, of course, have been angrily or excitedly tweeting at Square Enix to, localize this. This is kind of the perfect opportunity for us to finally get Seiken Densetsu 3 in English. Because of the effort that would take, I think Square Enix could even get away with charging $60 for this release here in North America. A lot of us are very hopeful, particularly after comments from M2's founder. M2, of course, being the pretty much best company in the business for retro ports and emulations, said literally that they could do an English version. Square Enix just needs to say the word. Of course, part of why that is notable is that it's kind of a big deal with Seiken Densetsu 3, the way that they used like image file compression on the like language files in the game, and the assets for like characters has been notoriously difficult to crack. Of course, there is a fan translation out there, but there's long been the expectation that this game would never be officially translated in the form of a ROM or emulation package because of how complex it is. That having been said, if M2 says they can do it, they can do it. So fingers crossed, you know, they're encouraging people to tweet at Square Enix. I'm encouraging all of y'all out there, if you haven't tweeted at Square Enix already, the hashtag we're using is localizemana. I strongly suggest you take part. We also have word here that Capcom is going to be releasing on April 18th the Disney Afternoon Collection for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. This is going to be ports of Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers 2, Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, DuckTales 2, and Tailspin. I'm, of course, really excited about that. I think these were some really fantastic NES games that I'm really looking forward to revisiting. What about you, Tailspin? Well, okay, actually, all of them except Tailspin. Particularly Darkwing Duck, though, which, as we've talked about, is actually kind of a redheaded stepsister to the Mega Man series.
Yeah.
What do you think, Slaggy?
I'm really excited. I just wish that we had announcement of a Switch version, but I'm really excited to play the Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers games again. You know, we just did a Disney Afternoon Buoy, Anime Buoy, April Fools about the Chip 'n Dale anime. I mean, animation. But those games are really fun, especially with two-player co-op, so I'm looking forward to probably playing that with you.
Excellent, excellent. We also got actual real word on Project Scorpio and what its specs look like. I'm not going to go into the nitty-gritty here. Digital Foundry, courtesy of Eurogamer, of course, did a very thorough analysis and comparison, but the TLDR here, for those of you listening, is that it sounds like a more powerful version of the PS4 Pro. Something that's really exciting is that because of the way they have structured the Scorpio and the Xbox One, it looks like all Xbox One games are going to see improvement, including backwards compatible 360 games. It looks like they'll be getting stuff like full screen anti-aliasing, possibly, you know, higher resolution rendering in some cases. It really sounds like a very impressive little box. What do you think, Slaggy?
They're just going to need the software to support it, honestly. That kind of goes for, you know, Xbox One needing to have a stronger library. I mean, unfortunately, I don't use my Xbox One that much at all. So, I mean, it's cool that they're really pushing the limit technically, but I mean, I don't know. By the time this comes out, there's already going to be, you know, gaming PCs even like further along than they are. So, yeah, it's hard for me to get too excited about it, but
you know, part of why I'm excited about it is that I've wanted an Xbox One S just to get so I could start playing 4K Blu-rays, and the Scorpio box is going to have a 4K Blu-ray player.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, I'll probably buy it just for that, and then having prettier Xbox One games will just be like icing on the cake for me, especially if that includes backwards compatible 360 stuff. I wonder if that means that we'll finally have a locked at 60 frames a second version of Bayonetta. That could be exciting. Let's see, we also have word here of Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm Trilogy, as well as Naruto 2 Boruto Shinobi Striker. And these are going to be two new PS4 games. One assumes they will probably also release on Xbox One in North America. The Ultimate Ninja Storm Trilogy is going to be Ultimate Ninja Storm, Ultimate Ninja Storm 2, and Ultimate Ninja Storm 3 in one pack on PS4. This is, of course, exciting, as these weren't all PS4 games in the first place. So I'm definitely looking forward to that when it releases in Japan on July 27th. Naruto 2 Boruto Shinobi Striker is a new 4-man team multiplayer online battle game. So it'll be like a 8-player versus game, similar to what we're really seeing very popular in the Japanese arcade space right now with games like Dissidia, Gundam Versus, etc. Very interesting stuff. It actually appears that Naruto to Boruto is going to be developed by Valhalla, or one of their subsidiaries, whom you might be familiar with from Devil Rebels Third. You know, a lot of people who used to work with Koei Tecmo. So very, very interesting stuff there. And I keep struggling with this name because two is like Toll, which is the Japanese word for and. So I keep reading it as like Naruto and Boruto. But I have been assured that it is Naruto to Boruto.
See, I was
and it's meant to lead from one to the other.
I was going to say something. I'm like, isn't it just Naruto and Boruto?
Nope. It's apparently meant to represent like the shift of generations, like one to the other.
All right.
We also have word here that Koei Tecmo has trademarked Seiken Musou. Unfortunately, before you get too excited about that, this appears to be related to the upcoming King Arthur movie starring Charlie Hunnam, which is releasing in Japan under the title King Arthur Seiken Densetsu. Right? That's the epicest troll. We also have word here that we will be getting PlayStation 4 releases of Jak and Daxter, Jak 2, Jak 3, and Jak X as PS2 classics on the PS4 PlayStation Store. Those are meant to be coming to the console later in 2017. I bet we will hear more about that at E3.
So, the Final Fantasy 15 mobile MMORPG is Final Fantasy 15 A New Empire. It's by Machine Zone, who is best known for Mobile Strike. It looks pretty bad, but if you're interested, you can be the hero of your own Final Fantasy 15 adventure in the brand new mobile strategy game Final Fantasy 15 A New Empire. Build your own kingdom, discover powerful magic, and dominate the realm alongside all your friends.
Jump into the action with Noctis, Cindy, and all your favorite FF15 characters.
Yeah, Cindy was totally my favorite character. Cool.
So what do you think about this one?
It looks embarrassingly bad.
I just keep looking at the renders they used, which I guess are renders by this studio because they don't match pre-existing key art from, you know, the actual 15 release. And it all just reminds me of that old web ad that had like the voice clip that when you like moused over it, it'd be like, are you a boy or a girl?
Oh, wow.
Do you remember that?
No, but I do remember the ones that were like for that one mobile game where it was either a mobile game or like a Facebook game or something where it was like they had scantily clad ladies. Either way, it's just a surprise because somehow Square Enix has managed to do pretty well with mobile titles. So for them to, especially Final Fantasy titles, so for something like this to be licensed is just embarrassing.
Yeah. We also have word here that Romancing Saga 3 is getting a new remastered version. This is really exciting because it's the first time this game has been remastered. It's going to be heading to PS Vita and iPhone and Android. And the really cool thing is that instead of remastering it with like Flash style sprites that I think we've become used to in these remasters, it's actually being produced in like 16-bit sprite art. And I actually think the new sprites look really cool. Have you checked these sprites out, Slaggy? What do you think?
Yeah, they look great.
Excellent. Oh, fingers crossed that this will release here in North America. I would be happy to put money down on it. We also have word that Shin Megami Tensei Deep Strange Journey will be releasing on 3DS in Japan in the fall. This is a remaster of Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey for the DS. It's going to be adding a new scenario and new characters as well, alongside a new ending route. So this is definitely very exciting stuff. A lot of people think it's going to tie into an all-new Shin Megami Tensei game. Fingers crossed that is true, because I love Shin Megami Tensei.
We also have word from Atlas that Etrian Odyssey Mystery Dungeon 2 is on its way to 3DS. That will be coming out in Japan on August 31st. There's also going to be an Etrian Odyssey 10th Anniversary Box Limited Edition, which will feature the game, a special box, and a 200-page collection of artwork that will be retailing for 9,800 yen.
Interesting. You know, I saw a lot of kerfuffle online, people upset that Atlas was announcing so many 3DS titles. To me, that kind of seems inevitable given how big the 3DS still is, particularly in Japan. You know, I wouldn't really expect anyone to shift all of their focus to the Switch quite yet, although now, given what we know about the Switch's sales, I guess it would start to make sense. But for stuff like this that has been in the oven for clearly, you know, months to years, I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to start seeing some of the, at least first party Nintendo 3DS swan songs, so to speak, be announced at this year's E3 with like release next year. So I think 2018 is where we're going to start seeing some slowdown. That's just my prediction.
You know, I'm inclined to agree. Something I did note while I was in Japan, there was no train I got on where I didn't see someone with a DS or 3DS. It was pretty wild. So I'm not surprised that those platforms are going to continue to be supported. Switches are in high demand in Japan. There were stores, every time I would buy a Switch game, because I bought a couple import Switch games, people in the stores were like trying to get me to sell my Switch to them. So like the store was like offering me nearly as much as I paid for it. Like, you know, the Switch was like $300 and people were offering me like $280 for it. So, which, you know, for buyback prices at a game shop is not bad. The used ones were being sold for the equivalent of like $400 US. It was nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, one store person actually got really snooty with me because I bought a copy of 1-2 Switch from him for the US equivalent of like $33. And I guess he was mad because he didn't have a Switch yet. And he was like salty and like, well, you know, this game is in Japanese, right? And it's like, first off, I myself know that if I'm playing this on a US Switch, it's just going to be in English anyway. But second, that wouldn't be a problem anyway. I'm in Japan, not because I can't speak Japanese. Like, come on now. So either way, interesting tidbit about the Switch. People want Switches hella bad in Japan right now. So that was something really interesting to see. But as it is, DSs and 3DSs everywhere. Every arcade we went to, we saw people sitting on benches playing Monster Hunter Double Cross because it came out the week we were there.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, just definitely still tons of reasons for software developers to be releasing 3DS games
well,
in 2017.
And fittingly, Atlas is also going to be releasing Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology for 3DS. It's a remake of the original game with...
Well, it's a full remake. It's going to have, you know, new elements, new scenarios, definitely a big budget production, sort of. I'm actually really surprised because they're remaking a game that was just one console back. Like, Radiant Historia is still playable on 3DS. Still, though, very exciting stuff. That's a game that I think doesn't get its due, and hopefully this time around, more people will dig into it. We also have word here of Digimon Story, Cyber Sleuth Hacker's Memory, announced for PS4 and PS Vita, and this has been confirmed for a North American release already in 2018.
And apparently it will also include Cyber Sleuth as well, that's what I'm reading.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. That'll be releasing in Japan in 2017.
Resident Evil Revelations is headed to Xbox One and PS4 this fall. More information will be coming soon, as per Capcom.
Excellent. You know, it's really interesting. The PS4 and Xbox One, like, at this point, I think you can get, like, the entire Resident Evil saga on these consoles.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild stuff. Last, but definitely not least, we also have word of an upcoming collaboration title that is going to be a certain Magical Index cross Virtualon. I'm not quite sure how this is going to happen, how it's going to work, but I like Virtualon a ton. I like Index well enough. This is going to be the first Virtualon title in 15 years. It'll be launching in Japan in 2018 for PS4 and PS Vita. Please look forward to it. I know I will be. With all of that having been said, it is time for Culture Club. This is, of course, our segment where we talk about what's new in the world of gamers and gaming.
And Boy George.
And Boy George from time to time. You know, I'm really going to have to, as like a troll-a-lol-a-lol, put in like a Boy George news link just to see if you'll read it.
You act like I wouldn't.
Right. So the first piece of news here in our Culture Club is that this year at WrestleMania, WWE's well-loved faction, The New Day, came out pushing a cart full of Chocobo and Moogle paraphernalia, and the three primary members were dressed up as jobs from Final Fantasy XIV, specifically Monk, Samurai, and Red Mage to celebrate the upcoming Stormblood expansion.
That's amazing.
You know, something that's really cool about that, and we may have actually talked about this sort of as an aside in earlier episodes, possibly around the conversation of Gamer X, but New Day member Xavier Woods is an avid gamer and has talked about Final Fantasy quite a bit. So, you know, back at the time of Gamer X, you know, because a lot of the Gamer X folks are wrestling fanatics, and was it the second year that they had the out WWE wrestler there? And we had talked a little bit about the crossover of of the WWE fandom with gaming. So it's really exciting stuff here. I like seeing this kind of weirder outreach on Square Enix's part. I think this is an audience that would get really into some of the silliness of Final Fantasy, but maybe wouldn't be as familiar with it. So I think that's cool.
Am I seeing a little Ultros wearing a red mage hat on the one who's dressed as a red mage?
I believe you're correct.
I need a little plushie of that.
Yeah, me too. We also have word that the upcoming Evo Japan pre-event tournament Sai has actually skipped inclusion of Street Fighter V this year in order to focus on Smash Brothers for Wii U. Of course, this is extremely interesting news. We will probably comment on it more if any more information comes up. The two-day tournament Sai will be taking place at Akihabara UDX on May 20th and 21st. Hopefully it will be live streamed, because I love watching that stuff.
Sega put out an 8-bit Bayonetta game for free on Steam for April Fool's, but the bigger piece of news is that there is a countdown clock that is set to end on the 11th, so by the time you are listening to this, probably.
A lot of us are assuming this means Bayonetta will be coming to Steam soon. I have seen some people hopeful that that might include Bayonetta 2. Obviously, I don't expect that, although I certainly wouldn't mind it. What I am hopeful for is that this might be another venue by which to play Bayonetta locked at 60 frames a second. Please look forward to it and expect us to follow up next week. We also have word here that Nintendo's Treehouse Log has started over on Tumblr. This is going to be their sort of direct-to-fan insight into games and franchises you love.
Treehouse Log, I get it.
Presented from a unique treehouse perspective.
It's like the treehouse is built with logs. Log.
That's the joke.
It's a log.
It's big, it's heavy, it's wood.
The King of Fighters.
It's better than bad, it's good.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that about all King of Fighters. But the King of Fighters is going to be getting a CG animated series starting this summer called The King of Fighters Destiny. And it appears that it's going to be releasing in China first, but there's also Japanese voice talents listed, so likely that it'll be getting a Japanese release as well.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of these international features coming out of the Japanese media space right now. I know that in the tokusatsu world, a lot of us have been looking at the recent Korean toku release of Power Rangers Dino Force Brave, which is like a semi-sequel to Kyoryuger, but produced with Korean talent. So definitely seeing a lot of these international releases more frequently of late. I think it's cool.
Yeah. Something that may not be as exciting is the Mega Man animated series, which is of questionable quality. I mean, I don't know. I'm just a little hesitant because, you know, Mega Man in 2017, but actually not until 2018, because Dentsu Entertainment has announced they are pushing back the show to 2018, and instead of airing on Disney XD, it will be on Cartoon Network instead.
You know what? If we get a new Mega Man title and it isn't awful, it will all be worth it. So I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed that it's good and that it leads to good quality Mega Man games again. We also have word here that a California court has ruled that the German cheat maker Bossland must pay $8.5 million to Blizzard after a judgment was found against them due to their hacks that they have released for sale for Overwatch and World of Warcraft. Apparently, Bossland did not even show up to the hearings, they did not contest this, and as a result, the judge threw the book at them. We will, of course, see if they appeal, we'll see how this goes moving forward, and we will talk more about this as more news comes in.
Yikes.
And Saigi, I'd like you to take this last one.
Yeah, this is a very interesting one. So, basically, there was a speedrunner named Cheese who broke the Mario 64 speedrun goal for getting all 120 stars with the time of 1 hour, 40 minutes, and 5 seconds. However, his goal was 1 hour, 39 minutes or less, but there was someone in the audience spamming his text-to-speech bot. So basically, this caused him to not be able to quite get the time that he wanted.
Yeah, you know, I feel for him because on one hand, he was really, really hopeful that he would, you know, get that 1 hour, 39-minute mark. He did still set a new record. The thing that is very unfortunate is that he was using some exploits and techniques that aren't really super common. So now that he has staked out that path, if anyone else like tries to do a very similar run but does nail that one last Bowser throw that he biffed, that will be a pretty easy way, relatively speaking, to beat his record and set a new one that he will struggle to clear. So I get his anxiety and his unhappiness, but at the same time, if I were him, would be pretty happy that I set a record.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for our Culture Club, but we do have some news that is...
controversial.
Oh my god.
So the first piece of controversial news we have here, of course, is the current kerfuffle regarding Persona 5. Of course, you know, Persona 5 released a week or two ago. Oh no, still just this past week. It is obviously a well-loved game. Many people super excited about it. But many people were very upset to find that they can't share the game in any way. You cannot take in-game screenshots. You cannot, you know, use the native PS4 UI to stream. It is on complete lockdown. Of course, you know, the official word out of Atlus is that it's due to the fact that it is a single playthrough story. You know, that basically Atlus is saying that Atlus Japan has, you know, tied their hands and is making them turn these functions off. But I've seen a lot of people online very upset. You know, in 2017, game sharing, not game sharing, but, you know, streaming and screenshotting is such a big part of the gaming experience. And, you know, to the point that it's baked into our consoles, that to have these features turned off is, you know, very upsetting. And, you know, while I am sympathetic to Atlus's plight, because I do see how we are currently in a culture where a lot of times RPGs end up just getting viewed in Let's Plays rather than being actually bought and played through. At the same time, you know, people who have paid for these features in their console feel ripped off that they can't use them. Slaggy, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I get that they don't want the story to be spoiled, but I mean, I feel like the people are gonna like troll spoilers now anyway, and I guess now they're allowing streaming and videos, just not screenshots, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And that there's certain guidelines that if you're streaming through YouTube or Twitch or other services, so...
Oh, and frustratingly to me, they're straight up like, we will put on, you know, DMCA takedown notices on you if you use your own gear to stream this game beyond, you know, this point in the game, which I think is a really inappropriate use of DMCA takedown notices anyway, and super punitive, because in most streaming services and sites, you can only get so many of those before your channel is, like, permanently disabled or what have you. So I actually think that that's, like, a bridge too far by far. What's your take on that angle?
Yeah, I mean, I know that, I mean, I'm not a streamer, but I mean, I know that these sorts of copyright things, and it's a very touchy subject, so.
Indeed. We also have word here that Bloodstained Ritual of the Night's Wii U version has been canceled, and instead will be available on Nintendo Switch. You know, I myself actually view this as a positive. Obviously, it would be nice if the Wii U version was still coming out, but with Bloodstained now aiming for the first half of 2018, they actually, Koji Igarashi-san even said straight up on the Kickstarter page for Bloodstained that at this point, you know, they're no longer getting support from the hardware maker, and so they have to drop development. A lot of people, of course, have taken this to mean that it's unlikely that Bloodstained would even be able to be certified for a release on Wii U in 2018. So to me, it seems like their hands are kind of tied and they did what they had to do. Unfortunately, a lot of people are claiming that they only backed the game to play it on the Wii U and as such want a refund. Of course, Igarashi-san's team has been on top of that. They have been issuing refunds. In fact, in their notice, they even suggested people file for refunds, that they would be happy to refund people if that was the only version they wanted, which to me seems very reasonable, and yet people are still complaining. Slaggy, what's your take?
I mean, I think that that they did everything right. I mean, in terms of offering refunds or the ability to switch to another console and not just force you to get the Switch one. So, I mean, I'm sorry that people are disappointed, but I think that they did everything right.
I agree. And, you know, I actually logged in and changed my digital copy from PS4 to Nintendo Switch. I would prefer to have this on the Switch over my PS4 or even my PC, because gaming on the go, and specifically like Metroidvania on the go, is everything. I'm stoked. A little bit confused as to why other people aren't, but at least, you know, if you are a Wii U diehard for this game, you can get a refund. I think that's by far the best thing they could do for you. And last, but certainly not least, we have word here that Microsoft has revised their Windows Store policy to remove all emulators. This is, of course, kind of a sticky subject because, you know, a lot of people out there who make emulators are not actually breaking any laws. You know, it's just software that's being made. It emulates other consoles, but if it's not using any of, like, the copyrighted code or whatever, it's not using stolen assets or whatever, it's all just being done, you know, through, like, reverse engineering, like, that's completely legal. So a lot of people are upset about this. I kind of go both ways because I see that, you know, emulators are completely legal, completely fair, but obviously you're releasing NES box on, you know, the Windows Store, people are trying to get it on their Xbox One, doesn't usually lead to hugs and puppies for copyright holders.
Yeah.
What's your take, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the complication here is just the Windows Store aspect of it. I mean, if you really want these emulators, they're available. So, I mean, I think people are going to find a way. So, it sucks, but, I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, I understand why when you know, if you wanted to have something, for example, like this screenshot on Kotaku shows Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, and people like Capcom are going to want people to find legitimate ways to play their games. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks, but I think it's understandable.
All right. Well, we also have one piece of Doom and Gloom today. Let's get to it.
Yeah.
We have word here via Silicon Era, who is summarizing a 2chan thread, where basically someone had noticed online that the official website for Dingo Inc., the developer behind such titles as Persona 4 Dancing All Night, Photokano, Reco Love, their website has been down for several days. There had been some rumors that they were having financial trouble, so this poster from 2chan went to Shibuya, Tokyo, and checked out their office in person and actually found on their door a notice letter stating that Dingo has suspended its business. They plan to file for bankruptcy in Tokyo District Court. And apparently, in that same thread, a former employee of Dingo, a supposed former employee of Dingo, came through and said that the company is currently in debt to the tune of more than $2.5 million US dollars.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, not a great thing to hear, unfortunately. I thought Dingo was doing pretty well. In particular, I thought Dancing All Night turned out really great. Previously, of course, they had worked on the Project Diva series, Hatsune Miku. They had done some work on the Love Live series, and they had even worked with Nintendo on Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn. So, it's always sad to hear of any studio going down. Especially these ones that have worked with so many storied franchises and done good work. So I really hope everyone who is hit by this unfortunate situation can find new employment soon. And in the meantime, I hope that this transition position isn't too tough on any of them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all of that having been said, it is time for our discussion. And this is going to be a little bit strange because it's kind of a new idea for us. But the TLDR, of course, is that I went to Japan for several weeks in March. We have been talking about that here on the show for the last few months, that it's a thing that was going to happen. I have now been there. I have a lot to say about game culture in Japan. Of course, Slaggy wants to compare some of my experiences there with his experiences here in North America, and I think this should be a lot of fun. So let's start off. Slaggy, what questions do you have for me coming into this conversation?
I want to hear everything.
Ah, well, that's not super useful, but okay, let me start off then. First off, it is not an exaggeration to say there are Japanese arcades, or there are arcades everywhere in Japan. You know, we went out to Shibuya, we went out to Akihabara, we went out to, you know, Ikebukuro, obviously just like straight up like checking these places out. We found arcades everywhere, especially in Akihabara, which, you know, I had sort of thought that like everything the internet had told me and anime had told me like couldn't possibly be right. But no, in fact, arcades in Akiba are more common than Starbucks in San Francisco.
Wow.
Like literally there would be arcades right next to each other. There would be arcades that were straight up like, this is a retro arcade. We only have retro games. Most arcades are like multi-story affairs that we saw. Each story would typically have like all just one genre of game. It was really quite remarkable.
So like, how did you decide which ones to go to and which ones to bypass?
Well, for our first couple days, we just went into every one and checked out every floor and looked at every game. I ended up seeing a lot of really interesting stuff. Like, I found a cabinet that was running the actual hardware of the old Golden Axe 2 game, or Golden Axe Revenge of Death Adder game, which, as far as I know, has never gotten a home port. I'm sure one of our listeners will school me if that is not true, but it was really cool to revisit that. I saw so many games while I was there. The most interesting thing to me, though, was that every arcade had a full assortment of, like, eight or more Dissidia machines and eight or more of the most recent Gundam Versus game. And, like, I always, like, knew that the Gundam Versus series was popular, but I don't think I ever saw a single arcade of the literally dozens, possibly more than 100 arcades we went to. I never saw an arcade without someone playing Gundam Versus. Like, those machines were always on, and surprisingly, so were the Dissidia games. And in fact, I had actually tweeted out an image, but on one, like, Friday afternoon, so not even, like, prime time, the arcades we were going to, every Dissidia machine at every arcade was packed. So it was just phenomenal to see how popular those games are. Other super popular games, rhythm games and stuff, every rhythm game in some of these arcades were being played. So cool. So what we used really to decide like what arcades we were really going to spend time in were really just like, are there few enough people here that we can play these games without being judged super hard? Because I cannot play Japanese rhythm games the way Japanese gamers can. Like, I am not that skilled. I'm not that practiced. Fighting games, you know, did a little bit better on. Found an arcade that had like virtual on, and so I was able to do well on that. And that was like our criteria, really, was like, does it have like left of center games, and are we going to be able to play without people looking over and laughing? Because, you know, you get two people playing like Taikyo Tetsujin, and if they don't know what they're doing, you're going to get looked at kind of funny. So that was how we really sorted that out, was like, where can we find machines to play and where are we not going to get judged?
And it's crazy to think about literally arcades on every corner, because I mean, arcades are all but dead here. And in terms of like Japanese arcades, if we didn't have round one here in the States, like, we really would not have much access to it, aside from maybe, like, you know, there's a little tiny arcade in Japantown here in San Francisco, but you know, we really have round one to thank for giving us access to, you know, some of the, especially like the rhythm games that are popular in Japan right now, and just, you know, like also Gundam Versus. Surprisingly, no Dissidia yet, but
I'm wondering if that isn't intentional on Square Enix's part. I've heard a lot in the last few weeks about how they're really hoping that that game takes off in a competitive sense, and so I'm wondering if they aren't planning on doing like a worldwide release at some point once the game has more content. Though, let it be said, a new character was added while we were in Japan. At this point, the roster is pretty beefy.
Yeah, and I have to ask, did you go to any round ones in Japan?
No. In fact, funny enough, we almost went to one in Ikebukuro, but we ended up not going, and I was just today talking about how I regret having not gone, just to compare the two. And, you know, I should say, in addition to games, the first floor of most arcades were, like, all UFO crane catchers.
Oh, of course.
And there were a few arcades that were only crane catchers. We played so many crane catchers, and actually won quite a few cute plushies, including a really amazing Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm Tara Bradford plushie that I have. I got out of a claw game, which I was very happy about.
So are the UFO catchers as difficult, or?
I think that they are about as difficult. Next time we go to round one, I'll show you some tricks I learned on how to win stuff out of those.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, dude. By the end, like, we had baggage space concerns. If we didn't, I would have brought home hundreds of plushies, I think.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I saw people who were just pulling animal after animal out of those things, and now that I've seen how it works, it is totally doable. Remarkable. Let's see. Another interesting thing about Japanese arcades. First off, Japan in general, there are vending machines everywhere, and in Japanese arcades, unlike a lot of North American arcades where, like, you're kind of discouraged from, like, eating or drinking, I saw a lot of machines that actually had, like, cup holders on them, particularly the Dissidia machines, which are, like, sit-down affairs in most of the arcades we were at. You know, and they'd have drink holders and even ashtrays in some case, because another very popular thing to do in Japanese arcades, smoke. Like, just chain smoke. In fact, something really interesting is a lot of the times we did arcade visits in the afternoon, there really would be, like, floors of Mahjong arcade machines and just the whole floor full of salarymen, like, on break or avoiding their job duties, just chain smoking and playing Mahjong on video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. Something really surprising to me, Street Fighter 4, super popular in Japanese arcades. You know, I recall it being a very controversial choice on Capcom's part to release Street Fighter 5 direct to PS4 without an arcade release. I have in recent months heard that Capcom is now going to be doing a arcade release for Street Fighter 5. I am not surprised, because Street Fighter 4 was so popular. Like, holy mackerel. I don't think I went to any arcade that didn't have Street Fighter 4 machines going, and also Tekken machines going.
Hmm.
Tekken, still very popular in Japanese arcades, it would seem.
Interesting. And something I'm really curious about is, you know, over the years, we've joked continuously about Patchy Slot, and I'm curious, just your experiences, like, seeing, like, is it really, like, was it really that dominant in the arcade scene?
So, in the arcade scene per se, no. Patchy Slot parlors are very much treated as, like, gambling parlors. That having been said, Konami's business choices make complete sense to me now. As common as arcades were in Japan in Akiba, that's how popular Patchy Slot parlors and pachinko parlors were everywhere that we went. Whether we were in rural areas, whether we were in, like, a little, like, rustic neighborhood that we were doing an Airbnb in, there was no time that we were ever more than a few hundred feet away from a Patchy Slot parlor. And as a result, like, I get why Konami and some other companies are so focused on Patchy Slot. Anytime there was a new machine, we would see flyers for it on the subway. We would see standees for it outside of the parlors themselves. While we were there, there was a new Evangelion machine that hit, and we saw flyers for it all over the subway. We saw video ads for it. We saw TV commercials for it. It was, like, everywhere. So it really did sort of illuminate how popular these must be, because the parlors, and we never really got into that just because I wasn't really sure, like, regulations on gambling as a foreigner. I wasn't really trying to dig into all that. But every parlor we went to was packed all the time. The little, like, sleepy hamlet that we were staying in via Airbnb, they still had a parlor. We went by it because we were trying to check out a Denny's that was nearby it, and that parlor was packed.
Did you say you were trying to check out a Japanese Denny's?
Oh, yeah, just to look and see, because I've always heard that Japanese Denny's food quality is super high. All of the fast food places that we went to while we were there were incredible. We actually made it a point to, like, do breakfast at McDonald's several days because they had these teriyaki tamago, like, egg McMuffins that were
Yeah,
and, like, they did a deluxe one that had, like, four slices of bacon that was called, like, the Giga Bacon Teritama. It was so good. So, like, American fast food in Japan, delicious. So we were like, oh, we'll just walk by the Denny's just to see. And even then, we came across Bachi Slot Parlor. And so it was very prevalent. Very prevalent. Makes total business sense of why some of these big publishers in Japan are so focused on Bachi Slot right now.
And I'm also curious, just to kind of wrap up the arcade, I mean, as far as my questions, you know, I was just kind of thinking about how even, and I mean, maybe this is just more my experience growing up, like my experience with arcades growing up in the 80s, 90s is either like, you know, sometimes there'd be some at a mall, you know, and some of them might have been like, you know, the Namco branded ones, but, you know, like mostly like I remember playing most of my arcade gaming in like pizza parlors and stuff. So I'm curious if you found arcade cabinet presence in like non-arcade places, like in restaurants or whatsoever.
You know, we didn't really go to the kinds of restaurants that had arcades, and the malls we went to, actually, now that you mention it, didn't really have an arcade presence. I can't speak authoritatively for all restaurants and all malls. Our restaurant experiences, well, let me backstep. Something that I've always heard before going to Japan, but that I can now really visualize and understand since I've been there, is that space is at a premium there. And that is absolutely true. You know, a lot of restaurants wouldn't have space for something like that. It's like many restaurants we went to were like a counter where the chef was making your food, seats on the other side of the counter, and then about a foot before you hit a wall. Very, very cramped restaurants, most of the ones we went to. And the classier ones that we went to, it almost just seemed like the space was there to be appreciated as empty space. So definitely did not see arcades in the spaces that I would expect to hear, with the exception of laundromats. I did know in one of the laundromats that we walked past every day that they had a Neo Geo machine in there. And I'm like, that is just like a home. But again, I can't speak authoritatively on that. I do know that of the malls we went to, I did not see arcades in those malls. But then the flip side is that the malls we went to, there were standalone arcades literally across the street.
Yeah, it's just so interesting to think of. I mean, I'm sure even in the arcade heyday, that it's nothing like what it is in Japan.
Yeah, no, that would absolutely be true. In my whole life, I have never, I mean, I saw on my first day out there, I saw more arcade machines than I have seen in my entire life combined here in North America, I think.
Wow.
And I'm sure that sounds like hyperbole, but again, you just need to keep in mind, I mean, I'm talking about on that first day, we went to 7 or 8 different arcades that were, you know, up to 8 floors of just arcade machines, each floor having, you know, 100 machines in some of these cases. And again, that we weren't even in Akiba at that point. We were just chilling in Shibuya, went to the Shinjuku station. We're checking out the various Taito game stations and Club Sega's there. We had some arcades that we were starting to like call home at that point. And yeah, you know, and now that I'm thinking about it, we even went to a couple movie theaters. There weren't even arcades in the movie theaters.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Very different from how arcades are enjoyed here. Did you have any other questions on that?
No, not really.
All right. So I also wanted to talk about retro game shopping. Of course, one of the big things we did in Japan was shop for retro games. I ended up buying a Poppin' Music controller and like a near complete set of all Poppin' Music games. Several of those games were literally 100 yen.
Wow.
Which is, you know, the US equivalent of right now, like 90 cents. So just a really remarkable experience. You know, I was able to find multiple copies of games that online are like really hard to find Japanese copies of. A lot of times the games were in like incredibly perfect condition for, you know, $20 for a copy of the Famicom Mini GBA release of the first Zelda game, which in Japan had like this really super super premium like box. It's like this really cool plastic box with like a smaller like cartridge sleeve in the style of the original Famicom box art for the first Zelda game. And it looks like a prestige like release that I would feel personally glad to have on display in my home for the US equivalent of under $20 in like mint condition. And these stores had so many games. You know, again, we talked about how space is at a premium. In addition, though, every game shop we went to was just packed to the gills with merchandise and hardware and games. You know, you think of the tightest, most cramped GameStop you've ever been in, and I guarantee you they still have fewer games than just the average game shop in Japan. It's like a whole different world, practically. One that I really enjoyed inhabiting. I ended up buying quite a few games over there, just because having them all there and having access to them all was, for me, a very dangerous combination. Why don't you explain, Saigi? I know that you've been on adventures here in North America for retro games. Why don't you explain the typical retro game experience you have in North America?
Yeah, I mean, you maybe come across one. I mean, we're lucky in the Bay Area that, you know, this is something that's a little more common. But, I mean, there was, for a while, I don't know if it's still there, there was one in downtown where we record the SS Game Buoy. There's Alameda is kind of near Oakland. It had a really popular one, but I believe they closed down, didn't they?
They did, yeah. And that one, do you remember that one, how it had like whole walls that were just full of games, almost like a library in terms of just like game, right. game. That is the closest to the Japanese game shop experience, except some of these stores, the aisles were literally just like 2 feet wide. And, you know, me with my broad shoulders, I literally had to walk like with my top part of my body rotated because my shoulders are so broad that I literally could not walk straight on through these aisles of games.
Oh, I would have had trouble there too, but yeah, so I guess what I'm trying to say is that here, and especially now in 2017, it's really sort of a boutique thing that, you know, you might find it in, like, you know, definitely in, you know, larger cities like San Jose or San Francisco. I mean, but even in San Francisco, I feel like there's not really any good...
Yeah, in SF proper, there's not a whole lot for retro games right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you want, like, retro, and I feel like some of the places we've had the most luck are, like, at little mall stores that have, like, collectibles, like, old Ninja Turtles figures and, like, just, like, old, like, not antiques, but, you know, like, retro toy stores are where these days we are most likely to see, like, retro gaming. I mean, it's not something that is as easy to find as I imagine it is there.
Well, and that is definitely true. You know, I have spotted in basically every mall I've been to here in North America in the last couple of years, these retro toy shops that you're talking about, where that have like a ton of used like toys from our childhood, and then just like little bins full of like NES games and, you know, sometimes some other games, typically a lot of PS2 games too. It is not like that in Japan. In Japan, it's almost like you walk into these stores and most of them are almost like stepping into a museum. At least one of the stores on the top floor also had its own little arcade set up with a bunch of retro arcade machines.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh yeah. But, you know, you'd walk in to any of these stores and just immediately in front of you, just thousands, literally thousands of games. You'd see NES game, or I'm sorry, Famicom games. You would see, you know, Genesis/Mega Drive games, TurboGrafx/PC Engine games.
Neo Geo.
Oh yeah, I saw literally dozens of Neo Geo games. I ended up picking up like three to bring home. I saw also like some of the most rare Neo Geo games I saw copies of in the flesh, but I wasn't really prepared to throw down, you know, $1,000 for some of these things.
Ooh, yeah.
Although I was tempted. I'll tell you what. As it is, I'm happy to finally have copies of both Samurai Showdown games in my library. I have a set of all of the World Heroes games other than Perfect now. So, you know, I got some cool stuff.
Was it with you and hating World Heroes Perfect?
I actually like World Heroes Perfect. I just couldn't find a copy of it there for a reasonable amount of money. But yeah, no, you know, I picked stuff up. I saw a ton of WonderSwan games, which is funny because here, even at like super enthusiast shops here, you can't find WonderSwan anything. And there I saw, you know, hundreds of games at most of these stores. Even just a very popular chain of used book and media stores called Book Off. you know, at Book Off, I saw all kinds of WonderSwan games as well, which makes sense. You know, it was actually released in Japan, and it was fairly popular there, but that was not something I was really expecting. So it's very surprising to me to see the ubiquitousness of used WonderSwan games. And again, you know, even these used bookstores, when you think of a used bookstore here, like Half Price Books, okay, you're going to see a couple dozen games. Most of them are going to be Wii games. But there, it's like, okay, no, this is like a complete library practically of PS1, PS Vita, PSP, PS2, PS3, PS4 games. See ton of Wii games, even Wii U games, all kinds of GBA games, just all over the place. Unfortunately, I basically saw no Xbox anything anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not surprising. It just was like, dude, why is it that I can find like WonderSwan games and Neo Geo Pocket games, but I can't find 360 games? Like, I had previously believed that the 360 at least had a little bit of Japanese support. That was always what I was led to believe. That did not match my experience there.
And I'm also curious, just in both, like the used bookstores and the specific retro game stores, like, were they pretty well frequented? Like, is this something that, you know, you would see just, you know, locals going in and just being, like, browsing the selection, or...
So every Book Off I went to was packed. Like, there were many people there, no matter what time of day it was. So those were very popular with locals. Interestingly, the more notable, like, retro shops, like the Super Potatoes, which weren't the only retro shops we went to, but I think are the ones that I could mention by name and have our listeners know what it is, those were primarily full of foreigners, like ourselves. So that was actually really interesting to note. I did deep in Akiba literally stumble. I'm just walking in Akiba and I see literally a sign pointing into like a little alley, which in North America I would never have gone into because that probably would have been an alley I'd get beat up in. But I was in Japan and it was just an alley that said Neo. There was a little sign that said Neo Geo, and then it had a bunch of writing. It also had like Mega Drive and Famicom, and then just an arrow to the right. And we're like, do we want to go down this little alley? And we ended up deciding like, oh, it's Japan, we'll be safe, let's do it. We walk into this random little shop, and that felt like, oh, this must be like the real local shop, because that one was full of people from the area shopping. And that is actually where I saw stuff like a Neo Geo cartridge of SVC Chaos, which is what I wanted, but it was like $900. I found a bunch of controllers there. They actually had the Famicom Classic or whatever it's called, although they were still upcharging it, so I didn't buy one. I totally would have bought one if it was retail price, though. But overall, it was a trip to be in that little store. And that one, yeah, definitely was like a locals shop. And I ended up getting really great prices. I bought a copy of the DON Dragon Ball One Piece Naruto Battle Coliseum game for GameCube, and I got it there for the equivalent of like $8.
Oh, wow.
That game, not a very good game, but for $8, there's not a lot I won't buy. So, yeah, just that one. And that was the shop, funny enough, that I think was probably the best stocked in like left of center games. That's probably not a coincidence.
Awesome. Well, I think my final question would kind of be, and I know you alluded to it a little bit where you said you didn't see a single day where you didn't see a DS or a 3DS, but I'm just kind of curious about like your experience seeing, because you talked a lot about the arcades, definitely, but I'm curious about like what your experience was seeing people playing 3DS, DS, if you saw any Switches out in the wild.
So I only saw one Switch out in the wild. Most of the 3DSs I saw, and I would say overall I saw hundreds of them, but they were pretty much all people playing Monster Hunter, which comes as no surprise, especially since new Monster Hunter had come out the week I was there.
And were these at like Monster Hunter cafes or?
No, these were typically like people just in public areas. I did see one group of gamers at a McDonald's. I was just everywhere. Like there was nowhere you could go that you didn't see people gaming in some form. Funny enough, most of the people with DSs were older people using them to play like Crossword and Sudoku and Slitherlink type games.
That's cute, but I mean, it's interesting because I mean, I feel like, and again, we maybe have a little bit of a different perception living in the Bay Area, where you know you'll go out and you'll see people, you know, carrying around playing a 3DS or whatever. But I mean, you'll see like you know kids at the store, like you know, with their 3DS or whatever. But Or, like, you know, on public transit, you may see someone, you'd be like, oh, they're playing a 3DS, but, like, it's just, it's not, even with, you know, as popular as something like 3DS is, it's not something that you just see everywhere. Like, oh, we're gonna go to Starbucks, people with their 3DSs. We're gonna go to, you know, the train station, people with their 3DSs. I mean, over here, we've just got, you know, people playing lots of mobile games and stuff, or, you know, like...
And make no mistake, I saw a lot of people playing mobile as well. But yeah, every restaurant, or, like, you know, more casual restaurant we went to, saw people with 3DSs. Every train station we went to, we saw people with 3DSs. Every, like, public park we went to, in, you know, we were there primarily in Japan for the Sakura viewing, Hanami. And even then, when we were at Yoyogi Park doing Hanami, we saw people with 3DSs. So, yeah, definitely everywhere. I mean, you know, and you talk about we here in the Bay Area, we do see people with 3DSs more than I hear people in sort of the middle of the country. I hear from people like, oh, I've never seen another person with a 3DS. That's definitely not the case here in the Bay Area, but it's definitely not the case in Japan.
I mean, when you think about it, I mean, 3DS and, like, PS4, like, gaming is a big industry here, but I guess just because our country is so huge that those big numbers are spread out, and so you don't see it dominating, you know, culture everywhere. And so it's just really interesting to hear, like, that, you know, everywhere.
Oh, and, you know, related issue or related note, the Vita really is very much alive in Japan. If you tasked me with going to a store and buying a Vita game right now, I'm literally not sure what store in my area carries Vita games anymore, even including some GameStops.
Yeah.
There were no video game or electronics sections that I went to in Japan where Vita wasn't the second largest, like, display in the gaming area.
Oh, wow.
Like, Vita is very much number two in Japan right now. Like, it was, like, 3DS and then Vita. The Vita sections were way larger than, like, Nintendo, anything other than 3DS, way bigger than the PS4 areas. The Microsoft areas were non-existent, as noted. But, you know, most of these areas, like, we'd go to, like, the Yodobashi Camera stores, which are, like, really big, like, department/electronics stores, and they would have enormous sections for Vita games. It just was mind-blowing coming from here, where, like I said, even our GameStops locally don't have Vita sections really anymore. To see these, like, areas with, like, full displays, all kinds of, you know, like, fake boxes for new and upcoming titles. Just, dude, the Vita is very much still a power player in Japan.
Good for Vita. I am curious, did you see a certain model of 3DS, like, overwhelmingly more popular?
I think the one I saw most common was the new 3DS, but not XL.
Right, so did you see a lot of, not custom, but, you know, like, a lot of people with their different faceplates and such?
You know, funny enough, that I did not see. It seemed like a lot of people just had, like, standard plain colors.
Oh.
In fact, I can only really think of, like, one person I saw with a custom faceplate, and then it was just, like, one of the stripy polka dot ones.
That's interesting.
It was cute, but it wasn't, like, I had thought I would see, like, all of the crazy, like, wood carving ones and all of the cool, like, Zelda art ones. I didn't see any of that.
Interesting. And I guess, did you have any notable interactions with just anyone, whether it was, like, you know, other tourists or just locals, like, any notable gaming?
You know, I didn't have my Vita or my 3DS with me. I only took my Switch on this one. So I didn't really get into any multiplayer gaming on portables. I got into a lot of gaming with other people in arcade games, playing rhythm games, you know, if, like, the My My game, which is really cool, did some really cool multiplayer in that. That's the game. It's a rhythm game that looks almost like a washer machine.
Mm-hmm.
You may have seen it online recently. Funny enough, that game's actually been around a while, but it has blown up in popularity recently. I played it. It had, like, Bayonetta music in it, which I thought was awesome. It's a Sega published game, so it wasn't that big of a surprise, but also some Sonic vocal tracks, but not Open Your Heart, which I was salty as fuck about. Dude, I would have played that in a heartbeat. But, you know, definitely got into a couple matches of Dissidia with other gamers. I had those kinds of interactions, and they were all very positive, very respectful, playing fighting games with people. Like, there was no sense of animosity, win or lose, just like appreciation for the fun time. And that was great. You know, I think I've talked here on the show about when I was a kid, I was playing Mortal Kombat 3, and I actually got a death threat because I got a perfect on someone using some cheap mechanics. So it was really cool to be playing a game and not have to deal with that. But in terms of like shopping and portable gaming, I did not have a lot of interactions because I didn't have my portable games. I think more interactions I had were involving like shirts I was wearing. Like I was wearing a Kirby shirt that several people commented on. I had a Power Rangers shirt that had a Daijujin, which is the Megazord from Zuranger, and that one got some attention. Not so much about the portable games, though.
It just seems interesting that what we would consider geek culture seems so much more widespread there. And I mean, I guess you always hear about that being the case in Japan, but to hear that that's actually true is just kind of like amazing.
Well, yeah, dude, living it was fantastic. I will say, you know, there was kind of the sense of like, among at least the Japanese people, that like, you know, the almost a sense of shame for the adults that were in that culture. You know, I went and saw some a Super Sentai movie while I was out there, and all of the like salarymen in business suits were like literally keeping their faces hidden with their palm like toward the door so people wouldn't see who they were. And so, you know, that definitely sucked. But, you know, at the same time, as a tourist, as a foreigner, I had a very positive experience in that regard. And I would wholeheartedly, like, if you're the kind of person listening to this show, you're interested in Japanese stuff, dude, go to Japan. It is rad as hell. You will love it. You will want to go back. I have literally already started planning another trip. Like, I could not get enough of it. If it were feasible, I would absolutely consider moving there. I just had a positive experience on every level, and it was so cool to be surrounded by game stuff and not have to like hide it, to be able to just be totally into it and totally supportive and see all of the stuff I've always wanted to see. It was an unparalleled experience for me.
I'm so glad you got to experience that.
Thank you.
And with that, I want to take this opportunity to share a quick tweet from Gym Leader Derek over on Twitter, because that's where the tweets are, where we had asked if any of you have been there. We said this week we kick off our fifth year talking about Japan as a gamer. What do you want to hear about? Have you been there? Gym Leader Derek said, "Loved my time in Japan. It's a nerd's paradise. Seeing so many different types of people at the arcades was especially cool."
And that is absolutely true. You know, I saw everyone at the arcades. There were families. There was like older women. There was older men. There were salary men. There were kids. There were like hipsters. Like everyone was at the arcades. It was not just like one type of person.
That's awesome.
And Derek, I completely agree with you there. And I thought that was amazing.
All right. So I think it's time for our What's Up.
I said, "Hey, what's going on?"
All right. Well, this week I have been playing Mass Effect Andromeda. I've been playing Poppin' Music. I've been playing Persona 5, and I have been playing Breath of the Wild. It's been like a month since we've recorded, so I've played a lot of games.
Yeah. I'm curious. How are you feeling about Andromeda? I know it's very polarizing.
I have actually decided not to play anymore. I really liked what I played. I only put about an hour into it, but then, like, you know, the BioWare announced that they were going to be heavily patching the game over the next 2 months, and one of the things they're going to be doing is adding same-sex male romance options. And you know, obviously it's one of the big complaints about the game from our community has been that the game is sort of anemic in that regard. So I decided that I would rather just wait. I have other games to play,
yeah,
particularly Persona 5, so I'm just going to give it a month or two and revisit it. I was very happy with it as a game from what I played of it, but I just think I'll have a better experience 2 months from now.
Excellent.
I also have been playing a lot of Poppin. Like I said, I picked up a ton of Poppin games in Japan.
I love Poppin.
I learned I'm not very good at Poppin. Like, in the arcade, I can do it, but at home, you know, playing older songs that I don't know, because that's one of the benefits of the newer Poppin games in arcades, is that they have so many, like, anime themes. The most recent Poppin game, I'm doing, like, the song from Osomatsu-san. I'm doing songs from, like, Dragon Ball Super. I'm doing songs from, like, Attack on Titan. Now going back to like these old original Konami songs, like they're great songs, but I don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I have to learn the rhythm of them while trying to hit all the buttons is not a good look. Breath of the Wild, of course, I continue to enjoy. I have crossed the 100 shrine mark. I'll be done with all of the shrines.
How about the 100 hour mark?
That I don't know, but I'm probably inching toward it. I pretty much only played Breath of the Wild while I was in Japan. As far as my games I brought with me, I had a whole list of like, oh, I'm going to work through Blaster Master Zero. Oh, I'm going to play some of these Neo Geo games. I have I Am Setsuna. I'm going to replay that. Nope, just Breath of the Wild. Last but definitely not least, Persona 5. I'm not as far into Persona 5 as I'd like to be because I only have so many hours in front of my TV a day, you know, what with work and my commute and everything. I really wish it were on Switch so I could be playing it more. But that having been said, it is a really incredible experience. And, you know, I've actually been dealing with having like a lot of like almost homesickness, nostalgia type feelings for Japan. I miss it so much already, way more than I would have anticipated. So playing a game that is so rooted in modern Japanese culture, where you can like explore the city to some degree and actually see sights that I really saw, even if they're like subtly renamed to avoid copyright infringement, is just something really special and meaningful for me right now. So very similar to the feeling I had watching the hit anime Your Name,
yeah,
which we will be talking about over on Anime Buoy.
Anime Buoy.
Please look forward to it. Slaggy, what about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Persona 5 as well. I ordered that and 1.5, 2.5 HD Remix. I have not had a chance to play either of them yet because I got them, you know, I just ordered them and then they had to download multi-gigabyte patches. But
cool.
Since we last recorded, I've been spending a lot of time with Breath of the Wild. Amazing. I don't want to talk too much about it because we're going to be doing that soon, I expect. Also, you know, tried to spend a little time on some other things on Switch. At the end of the month, I was able to spend some of my paycheck on some things, so I picked up Shovel Knight, which looks great on the Switch. You know, still, you know, it's Shovel Knight, so I mean, it's a great game. World of Goo is a lot of fun. Works really great with the Switch version. You know, it's more akin to the mobile versions because it's all touch control, so very cute, a lot of fun. Started playing I Am Setsuna, which is very, very dark concept, but also has a lot of humor in it. I'm not that far in, but it's nice to play a, you know, classic JRPG style game, and you know, the Switch is a perfect console for it. I've spent a little time with Voez, which is the Thai, I believe, rhythm game. It's from Thailand, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know that for fact, but I believe you're correct.
And it's, you know, it's pretty traditional. It kind of reminds me of a little less frantic version of like Cross Beats Rev or something. A lot of it's just, you know, like swiping, but you know, I like that sort of game. The music's pretty great, and you know, for $20 you get 100, like over 100 songs. So I mean, that itself, even if it's not, you know necessarily like licensed popular songs, just for a rhythm game to have that much content for that price is pretty good. And lastly, I just picked up Night in the Woods for PS4, and it's definitely something really special. I'm not super far in yet. It's a little light on the actual gameplay. You know, it's a platformer, but you know, only very lightly. So it's really just more about this, you know, sleepy little town that you're returning to, and you know, kind of seeing how it's changed since you've been gone. And so in that respect, it's, you know, really powerful, and I connect really deeply to a lot of the themes in it, you know. And the, you know, there's queer characters, and it deals with like some themes with like mental health. So I mean, it's really powerful that, you know, what you initially might think of just being like a cutesy little game with little animal characters, you know, it's definitely something special. So I'm looking forward to putting more time into that, and then, you know, definitely looking forward to Persona 5 and Kingdom Hearts 1.5, 2.5.
Excellent. I also picked up 1.5 plus 2.5. I just have not had time to dig into it. I also picked up Super Robot Wars V, Super Robot the Tyson V. So I have a pretty full slate for the next few months.
Excellent.
All right. Well, all that having been said,
it's time to catch up on some tweets. And I guess.
Excellent.
I guess it's been a while because our last one was our Switch launch blowout, wasn't it?
I think so. That was about a month ago. ago.
So we've got quite a few tweets to catch up on. So first off, we have some feedback from that episode. Brondorf says, yes, stoked. Miru69 said, the last episode of GameBuie.org is awesome. I had no idea that so many indies were coming to Switch. We got a tweet from Your Enzyme saying, I know you two are super focused on Zelda and Switch right now, but I'm hoping at least one of you have played Horizon, Horizon Zero Dawn. Happy Nato said, if not, do so. Really great game plus fierce video, new fierce video game heroine. And then Your Enzyme saying, it really was amazing. It was my second platinum after Life is Strange. So yeah, I've definitely heard a lot of positive things about Horizon Zero Dawn. Just kind of has been lower on my radar just because there's so much like marquee gaming coming out right now. Like Persona 5 is something I've literally been waiting years for. So, you know, I'll definitely get to it. Usually I would not include a tweet of yours, but you had retweeted Waypoint saying Bandai Namco, which is hilarious because how many times have we said that here on Game Buie? It's been Maya saying, you know, in my chatter about gaming podcasts I heart, I forgot to highlight the boys over at GameBuie.org. Great stuff. Aw, thank you.
And, you know, I just want to say real quick, too, I will definitely at some point this year play Horizon Zero Dawn. It just, you know, play back what I said, you know, not 5 minutes ago. My slate is already so full right now, but I definitely think that's a big 2017 game, and I'll want to play it before the end of 2017 so that it is included in our end of year discussion.
Indeed. And we got some feedback for our Slowcast, which was our Slowbro, Slowpoke, Slowking episode. O'Krylo said, fixed it, and included a screenshot from iOS of playback speed times 2, because yes, we did slow it down. And then an amazing never-ending gif of Slowpokes yawning, and as the Slowpokes yawn, there is a Slowpoke yawning inside of it.
Yeah.
Similarly, Your Enzyme saying, I'm nervous, I know what your April 1st episodes are, then following up with, it's everything I feared. So yeah, we definitely had a lot of fun with Slowcast this year. You know, we try to keep things silly and also still informative, so hopefully you enjoyed it. With that, that does it for our tweets. So thank you for your feedback. As everyone always, we love your feedback. We like your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter. You can mail us at mailbuie@gamebuie.org.
mailbuie@gamebuie.org.
And please do. Mailbuie feels very special when it receives an email from you. And our home base is gamebuie.org.
Gamebuie.org.
Where you can catch up on this is going into our fifth year. Oh my gosh. So the prior 4 years, I guess, of content. Is that what it would be?
I believe so.
I can't do math right now. It's just there's so many of these.
Yes, right now. Not ever.
Well, let's wrap this up with your shout-outs.
Yeah, as ever and always, of course, I'd like to give a big shout-out to the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com, where you can hear us, as well as such shows as Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. I'd be remiss not to mention my own work with Shane over on Ranger Pridecast, where we talk about the current season of Power Rangers, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai series, upon which Power Rangers is based. You can also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd also like to shout out to a few non-VOG shows, particularly the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out Slagkick's show, Reading is Fundamental, where he features, alongside myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, as we talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Slaggy, take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Video Game Realness, a.k.a. VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. Maybe not weekly these days, but we're so happy they're back. I'd also like to shout out to the Joystick Jockeys, who are back in action. Those are DJ and Ruben, who are two LGBTQ QT gamers who love games and love talking about them. Always a blast hearing them share their gaming experiences, as well as our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club podcast, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I'd also like to shout out to some of our sister monster shows, part of the Buoy fleet and not. We have Anime Buoy, which is your monthly port of call for anime recommendations, news, bits, and discussion that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. And the Same Type Attack bonus podcast, or Stabcast for short, over at stabcast.org. Your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon, where we're going to be looking forward to talking about Pokemon experiences in Japan. Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. And unfortunately, they closed their doors quite a while back, but will forever be pouring a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain. And can we talk about those Great Fairies in Breath of the Wild? They're basically drag queens. I mean, I guess all the Great Fairies kind of are, but more so.
I'll do you one better. Next week, we are going to do a Game Buoy Live. And you know what we're going to talk about at Game Buoy Live? I mean, you do, but say like what or something for the sake of our listeners.
Eggmania?
We are going to talk about Breath of the Wild. We're going to talk about the whole thing. It's going to be live. We're probably going to screw it up, and it will be a beautiful mess. That having been said, if you would like to hear us talk live for 2 hours about Breath of the Wild, be there next Saturday, the 15th.
Yes, we figure you're going to be doing maybe Easter things on Sunday, so we will check in with you on Saturday.
That having been said, thank you for joining us this lovely Sunday evening. It has been a real pleasure and delight to talk with you. We look forward to next time, but until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And see you, Space Cowboy.
Sayonara, Space Cowboy. I don't know how to say Space Cowboy in Japanese.
Speaking your mic for me?
Speaking to your mic for me.
All right. Looks good. Mics are hot.
Hot.